So in this text called Bhakti Sudha or the Nectar of Devotion, last week we had talked about the four pursuits. What are we all looking for? Most of us are looking for artha, that is wealth or security, and then kama, the sense pleasures, joys in life. And we had talked that to get these two, one can do them either ruthlessly, selfishly, acquire whatever pleasures I want, whatever wealth, or I do it under the influence of dharma, under the influence of righteousness. Acquiring these is necessary for our life, but how do we do it? Do we do it with the right means, with the right purpose? Then it's okay. You know, it's okay to have wealth, security, it's okay to have enjoy life, but it should not be done in the wrong way. And then we did not cover, but what about heaven and how do we perform these activities? What is my goal? What is my purpose in performing these spiritual activities? We shall talk about that today, because people always think, you know, heaven is the place to go. It's so wonderful. It's so much joy and fun and never-ending pleasure. So what really is the meaning of heaven, we'll talk about, and then move on to how one should do one's duties in this world. So verse number 3 on page 5. Punya rupautra vai dharmaha. Rupotra vai dharmaha sakama swarga prapakaha. Sakama swarga prapakaha. Chayat punyasya tannashaha. Punyasya tannashaha tasma nechanti tam buddhaha. Punya upa atravai. So he says duties, righteous. Punya means good deeds. You know, we do good deeds. We help others or do some prayer, meditation, fasting, some spiritual activities. So these are the spiritual or meritorious deeds. Patra here, vai indeed. Sakama swarga prapakaha. If it is done with a desire, with a selfish desire, that by doing these deeds, may I go to heaven, or may I get success, or may I get fame, or may people remember me, or may people appreciate me, then activities done with a particular goal in mind, swarga prapakaha, they will take you to heaven. You know, people say, wow, that's good. What's wrong with that? He says the wrong with it is that kshayat punya asya tannashaha, that stay in heaven, nashaha, ends when the meritorious deeds are exhausted. When your bank of meritorious deeds, whatever you have done, ends, then your stay in heaven ends and you come back to this earth or continue your spiritual journey, your cycle of birth and death. Tasmat, therefore, na ichchanti tam buddhaha. Buddhaha means the wise person, na ichchanti. Wise person do not want heaven. That's not their goal in life. And heaven is glorified in all the religions, whether it's Christianity or Islam. Even in Islam, they say if you die, you know, if you sacrifice your life, you go to heaven and you get all kinds of pleasures. Even in Hinduism, they have these descriptions of beautiful heavens where, you know, it's like you are sitting there and you never go old, never. You know, you always stay young and beautiful, healthy and pretty or handsome. You get no sickness, never get sick, never get old. Whatever you desire comes to you. Say you say, I want to eat mango, you know, mango will appear. You say, I don't want to cut the mango. I don't want to go through the bother. I just want to taste the mango. So the mango will disappear and you'll get the taste of mango in your mouth. So you'll enjoy the mango without even bothering to cut it. That's too much work. I'm not going to cut the mango. Okay? So whatever joys you want appear instantly. There is no effort required. It's always perfect weather, 70 degrees. The sun is always shining. The golf courses are beautiful. The houses are palatial, huge houses. And this reminds me of this story. There was this couple, old couple, who were in a car accident, and they met with a head-on collision, and they both died at the same time. But they were very good people. This couple were very nice people, and so they both went to heaven. And so they were old. So anyway, they died and went to heaven, and St. Peter and all his angels welcomed them and say, "Sir, madam, welcome to heaven. You have lived a good life and you are most welcome." And they said, "Oh, that's very nice." And so they said, "How much do we have to pay to get in heaven?" "Nothing, sir. You have done so many good deeds, you get in just like that." He said, "Okay, where are we going to stay?" Show him this 17-bedroom house. He said, "This is yours." He said, "All of it?" "Yes, this whole house." "Just for two of us?" "Yes, just for the two of us." "Who's going to clean this house?" "Don't worry, sir. There is no dust in heaven. House cleans by itself." Everybody's thinking, "Wow, that's great. You don't need a maid." "How about food?" "Sir, what food do you want? You want Chinese, you want Mexican, you want French, you want Italian? Just wish and it appears." "Who's going to do the dishes?" "Dishes get done by themselves. You don't have to do anything." "Wow, that's great. How much do I have to pay for?" "Nothing, sir. You did so many good deeds. The house is free." "Okay." He says, "What do you like to play, sir?" He says, "I love golf." He says, "Okay, look in your backyard. It's an 18-course golf course. The best grass ever. Sun never sets. You can play in the morning. You can play at night. You can play 24 hours. You can play 18 holes, 36 holes, whatever you want to play. Your ball never gets lost." That's So man starts crying. He gets very upset. So the wife says, "What? You are in heaven. You have this big house. You have all the food you want. You love to play golf. And now you are unhappy. Why are you angry? Why are you sad?" He says, "You know what? If you had not fed me that healthy bran, high fiber diet, I would have been here 10 years ago." He said, "You gave me the healthy food." You can never win with some people. So heaven is a beautiful place. They say, "Wow, then what's wrong with it? And why do the people say heaven is no big deal?" Because heaven is like going to Hawaii. Say, okay, I collect my money. I work hard whole year. And then I have some savings in the bank and my credit card, I have enough balance. And I take my ATM card and I go to Hawaii. And there I spend my time week or 2 weeks, enjoy myself with my friends, swimming and all that, having a great time. And then I find slowly my ATM card, is getting maxed out. My bank account is getting less and less. So now I can't stay here in Hawaii any longer. Why? Because I have no money. So I don't tell them, my friends, because then they'll say, "Oh, this guy is nobody." So I say, "You know what? I got an urgent phone call from the office. There's some major crisis. Sorry, I have to." They say, "You have to leave? We could have had more fun." "No, sorry, I have to go." So when the money runs out, then I leave. So I can work for a whole year and then go enjoy Hawaii or Bahamas or, wherever. For a week or 2 weeks, I can't stay there forever. I cannot stay for my whole year in Hawaii or Bahamas. Who's going to pay? So I have to come and work hard for 50 weeks so I can enjoy 2 weeks. So similarly, heaven is like that, where I accumulate merits. That's like money I'm putting in the bank, all my good deeds. I help somebody, or I do some charity, or I fast. Why do I fast here? So I can feast in heaven. Why do I sacrifice here? So I can enjoy in heaven. And this is okay. It's nothing wrong with that. But heaven is not the ultimate destination of joy. Why? Because in heaven, the same human jealousies and conflicts are there. Like say now, there's a concert going on, right? And so somebody has bought a $100 ticket. He'll obviously sit in the first row. and somebody buys a $10 ticket, where will he be? He'll be in the nosebleed seats, you know, on the top of the stadium. And there he can barely see the singer and he has to watch on the screen. So similarly in heaven also, you know, you are like they have dances and shows. They have dancers, celestial dancers, most beautiful and young and pretty and musicians and everything that is going on. But there is one guy who has done a lot of merit, so he's sitting in the first row. But if you just barely snuck in because you have done a few good deeds, you say, I'm a citizen of heaven. Everybody's equal. They say, sorry, no, everybody's not equal. Even though you are in heaven, the guy there has done more good deeds, so he gets to sit in the first row, and you have to sit in the back row. So there you're trying to watch the singer, and you say, what, I am in heaven, and I'm not even having any fun? Then you're jealous, you know, this guy, why is he? Then the other problem is it's temporary. It's just like, you know, like when you're on your phone, say if you have bought a card, you know, a phone card, you know, where you can speak for, say, 30 minutes or 60 minutes, and so you're calling and talking, and slowly the card is going down, 3 minutes left, 2 minutes, 1 minute, and the card, and in the middle of the conversation, your card ends. So similarly, heaven is like that. It's like that card which guarantees you enjoyment for a certain amount of time. So you are there and you are enjoying the show and it's most beautiful and you're having a great time and the clock is ticking. And the moment your merit ends, in the middle of the show, you are pulled out. Okay, go back to earth. I didn't at least get to watch that show. No, sorry. Your time is up. So heaven is a temporary zone of pleasure where you enjoy, but it is limited. It is based on what actions you have done. And the human conflicts don't end there. The jealousies and the disturbances and the fear that I don't know when my time is going to end. So that's why they say that wise people, they don't do spiritual activities for going to heaven. Because they say, what is the use of going to heaven? Like you're reading in that Kathopanishad on Tuesday, that one Tuesday, the women's study group. They're talking about this young boy, Nachiketa, who goes to talk to God Death himself. And the God of Death tells him, you know, you can have anything you want. You can have all the pleasures on earth. You can have even the pleasures of heaven. You can have whatever you want. So he says, okay, tell me, these pleasures, will they last forever? He said, no, you know, earthly pleasures don't last forever. You know, no matter how, you may be the king of the country, you may be the president, you may be, you know, Bill Gates, or you may be the, you know, best sportsman or the most beautiful Miss Universe. You know, she's very beautiful for a year. And then next year, they take away her crown and the next person comes. So sorry, you won't get permanent joy. He said, okay, then you can keep these. The young boy, he said, you can have all these, your elephants and your pleasures and your joys and your beautiful girls. I don't want them. I want the permanent joy. I want that joy which will never end. So wise people say that I do not want to perform righteous deeds just to get to heaven. I want something higher. I want something better. So how, with what attitude should one work in this world so that I spiritually evolve is covered in verse number 4 on page 6, which is connected. Manashuddhikaro dharma. Nishkamo yoga sadhakaha. Artha kama vubhau loke. Kevalau bhoga dayakau. So dharma, so spiritual activities, righteousness done mana shuddhi kara, for the purification of mind. So activities performed for the purification of the mind. What do we mean by purification? We have talked about that. Pure mind is that mind which has no jealousy, no greed, no selfishness, no desire, no hatred, no jealousy, but is full of love, full of compassion, full of unselfish attitude. So such a mind is a pure mind, and also a mind that is not disturbed, that is not agitated. Because what disturbs or agitates our mind are these negative qualities like hatred or jealousy. When I'm jealous of somebody, then my mind is constantly thinking of her and how can I overcome her and how can I be better than her. So activities that are purifying the mind reduce the agitation of the mind. So such a pure mind, nishkama, and when it performs deeds unselfishly dedicated to the Lord, yoga sadhakaha, they help us in accomplishing yoga. Yoga here does not mean the exercises, the floor exercises that we do, but yoga here means yuja, to unite, comes from the word unite. So activities that unite me to the Lord, and the Lord is not only outside, but the Lord is within me as the life. So that which brings me closer to the Lord within and without, who is everywhere, such activities performed unselfishly, dedicated to the Lord, purify the mind and help me to spiritually evolve. But how about activities done with a selfish motive, just to enjoy, you know, to accumulate wealth and to enjoy life, sense pleasures? Artha, kama, ubhav, these two, artha, wealth, and kama, sense pleasures, ubhav loke, in this world, when these activities are performed, when a person lives for the body, I am the body, and then I do everything for the fulfillment of the body. So me, myself, and my family, that's all I'm thinking. Even my family, not me and I, you know, that to that extent, that person performs. And so he has all the sense pleasures he wants, collects all the wealth and security, but only for himself. Kevala, what all, only thing it does for him is bhoga dayaka. It just gives him sense enjoyment. So he enjoys, he accumulates, but he does not evolve. He may become even very rich. He may be the world's richest man. He may be the world's most successful person, but spiritually there is no growth. So that is what this particular verse tells us, that one should work in the world, constantly work. One should accumulate wealth. One should enjoy life. We're not saying you should not. But A, it should be done honestly. And secondly, I have to work. See, nobody, unless, you know, you become a monk and just stay in the forest or in the Himalayas. And some people have that kind of vairagya, that kind of detachment, where they give up family, they give up their money, they give up everything, and they just go live in the forest, and they live off the fruits, or if somebody comes and gives them some bhiksha, some food, they live. Otherwise, they just stay in their meditation or in their study, or some of them give up their world, and they go to other monks, and they serve them, and they study. Like, you know, the acharyas who come here, Swami Ishwarananda and Swami Bodhatmananda and Vimalji and all, they gave up their worldly activities and they went to the Chinmaya mission, where they spent 2 years in study. And like Swami Ishwarananda was a very successful software engineer. He had a very good job. And today he could have been the top of some big company, you know, worth millions of dollars. You know how these computer, you know, programmers who have big successful. He could have been on top of the world, but he gave everything up and he just went and stayed with the teacher for 2 years, 2.5 years, studied. And then the rest of his life, he has dedicated to serving us, you know, through service. He is acquiring knowledge. He is continuing to study. But now his time to study is gone. He doesn't even need to meditate. His life is spent in serving his teacher. That's what he says. I'm serving my teacher and I'm serving the Lord. And so such activities done without any selfish desires and dedicated to the Lord, what do? They reduce our vasanas, because vasanas are our selfish tendencies which make me want more wealth, more pleasure, more fun. And then also the problem with the vasanas is the more you indulge, the more it becomes stronger. Like anything, it could be even like a cigarette. You know, first time your friend gave it and you just tried it. And, it was terrible. You get coughing. But then they say, you know, it's cool. Everybody smokes. Come on, you know, you need to. Or it could be alcohol. You know, come on, you know, it's a cool thing to do. So you start once, twice you do it. And then you say, it's not that bad, you know. And then you start doing it every day. And then you get addicted. And then it ultimately affects your health. You know, you get cancer, you get liver disease, all the places. So these vasanas, when they are indulged, in the beginning they may look very pleasant, a lot of fun, but in the long run they are addicting. You get addicted to that, you develop habits, it becomes habit forming, and ultimately it becomes harmful to your health. To your health, and not only to your physical health, but your mental health, because then you are continuously dependent. Whether it's a drug, or whether it's alcohol, or whether it's cigarettes, or some people are addicted to work, you know, to power. I must have more power. I must have more wealth. I must be the most powerful person in the land. And so they will do anything. You know, anybody comes in their way, they will trample over him. So all kinds of negative activities are performed by a person who wants to enjoy life but does not care for dharma, does not care that what I am doing I should do with the right attitude and with the right purpose. Because ultimately, whatever I have, whether it's wealth, whether I have sense pleasures, when I have enjoyment, I have to constantly remember that there is a Lord above who has given me my body, my mind, my emotions, my intellect to think. And so whatever I accumulate, whatever I earn, there is a higher power. And so one has to constantly remember that. There was a Raman Maharishi in South India who lived in the past century, about 70 years ago, and he made a very beautiful statement. He says, Ishvara arpitam nechaya kritam chitta shodakam mukti sadakam. So he says, Ishvara arpitam, dedicate all your activities to the Lord. Constantly get up in the morning and thank him for another day. At the end of the day, thank you, Lord, for another day. Thank you for this opportunity to associate with, you know, people who think and with these beautiful ideas. You know, I every day I feel so grateful to the Lord to give me the ability to associate with such ideas and such thoughts and with such, you know, divine people. It's such a blessing for all of us. So constantly be grateful to the Lord and remember him thankful. And whatever I have, everything is your gift to me. Swami Chinmayananda says, what you have is his gift to you. What you do with it is your gift to him. So whatever abilities I have, am I using it for serving the world or am I using it for selfish beings? So every ability that has been given, it is a gift from the Lord. So Lord, may I use that ability to serve you. And the Lord does not need service. He's all perfect. He's all complete. But through those abilities, may I serve the people. Not with the arrogance that I am somebody special and I am helping all these people, but with the idea that the Lord is in all of them. So when I'm helping them, it is the Lord himself. My dear Lord, my Father in heaven, my beloved, is the one that I'm serving. So Ishwar arpitam na ichchaya kritam. And the one activities that are done without selfishness, without selfish desires, what do they do? Chitta shodakam. They purify the mind. When I give, when I share, then automatically it reduces my jealousy, it reduces my hatred. When I share, I develop more love, I develop more compassion, I develop contentment. You know, when I, the Lord is the giver of everything, then who am I, you know, to complain? Whatever I have. So, chitta shodakam and mukti sadakam, and it helps me in liberation. It helps me to get out of this bondage. Now, what is liberation? We'll talk about that in more detail next week. But there are two aspects to liberation which will be discussed. One is liberation means freedom from the cycle of birth and death. where a person then is always remains in bliss, always remains happy with this, with the Lord. But he said, what use is that? After death, if I get it, I don't need it. I want peace right now. I want happiness today. I'm having problems with my husband, my wife, my child, my boss, my neighbor, the weather. You know, I want happiness now. He said, okay. Liberation also means freedom from anxiety, freedom from sorrow, freedom from worry. So that will be discussed next week. So today we have basically decided that my wealth and my sense pleasures should be controlled by righteousness, and should my activities should be for serving the world. Whatever I have, use that to make this world a better place. Because just mere enjoyment, all it will do is strengthen your vasanas, make you more bound, make you more dependent. And we are studying in the Sunday class also, we have been for the past few weeks, that how these desires can bind you, can make you dependent upon it. So the goal of life is liberation or freedom from the bondage of these sorrows, freedom from all these dependence. So this we shall cover next week. We do have some time if anybody would like to comment upon this.
Look, it makes sense when you talk about heaven that you might not have a good seat. Because if you've already been there many times before, I mean, you're evolving in heaven just as you are evolving.
Not only that, but depending on the quality of good deeds. So if you have done very good deeds, you know, you'll get a house next to Indra, the king of heaven. So you'll have a palace, you'll have the house in Seven Oaks. And then another guy who has done a few good deeds, his house will be in Two Oaks or One Oaks. So they have that too in heaven also. There's all grades. And there are actually seven classes of heaven. There's the highest heaven, and then there is the lowest one, barely made it. Because even in heaven, there are slums, you know, where these guys live in that bad part of heaven. You know, there's nobody wants to go there. So he's thrown there, you know, where the cops even don't come and there's crime. And may not be crime, but I mean, it's not as posh. You may have a, you know, two-bedroom condo, you know. While the other guy is having a 14-bedroom house, so, you know. Yeah, but no, that's how. Because jealousy is there too. Competition is there. Everything is there. It's exactly like Earth, only just more beautiful, that's all. Anything else? Anybody else has? Yeah, Acharya is a teacher. Brahmachari is a student. You know, Brahmachari is one who has given up the world and sense pleasures to learn the truth. And so he goes to an Acharya to learn. So Brahmachari is like a beginner, like who has just, like an intern, you know, who wants to study medicine. So he goes to a medical school or a hospital to learn. So similarly, Brahmachari is a beginner who has given up the world, wants to learn the truth. So that's what Brahmachari is. That Brahmani Charati means one whose mind is always reveling in the Brahman, in the higher. His mind is reveling, but he's still not at achieved that. Acharya is one who is a teacher who has evolved, who is now at that highest state and can teach others. So Brahmachari is a student, a beginner. But also here in the Chinmaya mission, what they do is once you go there as a student, and after 2.5 years of studying, if you decide you want to stay and serve the mission and continue your spiritual growth, then they give you a title of Brahmachari and give you a name, a new name. And then you, as a Brahmachari, you then are assigned to go to different centers and teach. And while you are teaching, you are also learning yourself. And you are slowly evolving. And after 5 to 7 years or 8 years or sometimes 10 years, depending on your spiritual growth and all that, then they give you the title of Swami. So that then you have arrived, then you are at a higher level. So Brahmachari is the beginner on the spiritual path. Acharya or Swami is the higher. Well, the Brahman, Kshatriya, the Vaishya, and the Shudra, they are the four divisions. They are not really the highest society has made them. Actually, all four are equally important. Brahmanas represent the intellectuals, the teachers, the scholars, the priests. We need those. Kshatriyas represent the warriors and the rulers, you know, like the congressman and the president and all. We need those. Vaishyas represent the business community. We need business people. And the Shudras represent the workers, you know, the welders and the plumbers and the secretaries and the ones who work in the farms, you know, the farm workers. So we need all of them. But society somehow says, you know, the intellectuals are superior, then comes the rulers of the country, then comes the businessmen, and then the workers are the lowest. But it is based on your experience, based on your training, based on your mental ability. Somebody who can think and teach becomes a brahmana, a teacher. One who is good in running the country, his administration, he becomes a senator or a congressman or a president. One who is good in business, you know, becomes a farmer or a businessman. And then there are others who can work, and we need them. You know, we need people to run the factories, to run the shops, to run the offices, to, you know, to serve in the military as the, you know, as the soldiers. And so we need those people. So these are just four classes based on their training and based on their abilities and based on their skill and based on their desire. So it's not that one is more superior to the other. Like you need all your fingers. You can't say my hand is superior to my feet. No, but the feet are required as much as the hand or as much as the nose or as much as the ears. Eyes, everything is important. So similarly, these are four castes are based on your abilities. But society has kind of corrupted this caste system to some extent by giving qualities. Okay, this one is superior and this one is inferior. And that's where the problem arises. Secondly, in India, the caste system was based on birth. If your father was a Brahmana, you became a Brahmana. If your father was a Kshatriya, high caste, you became automatically high caste. And so then the lower castes, so-called, were condemned to always, they couldn't rise, they couldn't work, they could not improve themselves, they could not associate with the higher caste, they could not marry, you know, so all those. So that is a perversion of the caste system, which is by law has been outlawed now. You cannot discriminate based on caste. But there was a time when the caste system was very powerful. So originally it was set up in every society. There are four kinds of individuals, the thinkers, the warriors, the businessmen, and the workers. And that's there in England, it's there in the US, it's there in India. But in India, they institutionalized it. And that's where the problem arose. That a person who's from the high caste, he says, my son will... It's like if you are a Kennedy, whether you are qualified or not, you automatically win the election. Or if your name is Bush, you know, you may be qualified or you may not be. You know, or like in the England, if you are the queen or the king, your son may be the most dumb or useless person. But after you die, he automatically becomes the king and runs. So then it becomes a problem. But if it is done on abilities, then it is not. So that is the problem. And if the caste system is there everywhere. You know, a person who owns a business, his son may be totally incompetent, may be useless. But when he dies, he'll give the business to his son, who may then ruin it. But, you know, but that's unfortunately, and it shouldn't be. You know, it should be on ability. So that is, in brief, the caste system.